This episode of the ABZ Football Podcast is sponsored by Siberia Bar and Hotel on Belmont Street, Aberdeen, located only 30 seconds from the nearest bus stop, taking supporters to Pittodrie for free on match days. Siberia is open 7 days a week, all year round. And to get fired in with our exclusive discount code, head to the bar and quote ABZPOD for a £3 pint of Foster's, a £4 pint of Moretti or Dark Fruits, or £5 for a pint of Fierce or Adake. That's any day of the week, including match days. And if you're with the little ones and are looking for a spot of pre or post match lunch, remember, under 18s are welcome in the bar with an adult, so make a day of it at Siberia. Come on, you Reds.
Red slight of foot there. Bukashina! 2-0 to Aberdeen!
It is Madison!
Hello and welcome along to episode 159 of the ABZ Football Podcast. I'm Gary Scott, and after a comfortable 65 minutes, I've decided to make a double switch to see things out and add to the pitch the diminutive Gavin J. Baxter and the iconic Graham Steele. Gents, how's it going?
I resent the use of the word diminutive.
I resent the fact that I have to talk about Aberdeen on a Sunday night.
I don't blame you, mate.
I wish I did walking away.
And breaking his social media silence, it's the one and only Mark Simpson. Mark, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Thanks so much for inviting me on. Cheers.
It's your own fault for having nothing better to do on a Sunday evening, to be fair.
Fair.
Welcome back to the show, mate. On this week's episode, we're going to look back over that last gasp defeat in Paisley on Saturday in the Central, checking with our loanees. We'll check out how the Quines got on and their return to SWPL action. Then we preview what, well, in one hand is possibly our season finale, but on another hand, possibly not. It's the Scottish Cup quarterfinal with Kilmarnock next Saturday lunchtime. But first, St Mirren 2, Aberdeen 1, Saturday the 2nd of March 2024 at the Smyser Stadium in the Cinchin. Listen, let's not beat around the bush too much on this one, shall we? Dons got off to a great start, a phenomenal finish from Conor Barron to give the Dons the lead. Fairly comfortable throughout. There was, of course, that double swap on 65 minutes that saw McGarry and McGrath coming on for Hoylett and Duke that saw us switching into kind of 3-5-1-1, looking more than happy just to kind of sit in and try and take the points. And then, well, how do you explain the end of this one? Devlin cut out after Olisanya nipping in front of him, taking the opportunity to buy a foul, which, idiot in the middle, Nick Walsh originally awarded as a free kick, but VAR, probably correctly in fairness, did indicate that the transgression had taken place in the box. Penalty awarded. O'Hara scoring past Roos. What a surprise, although he did dive the right way this time. Worse was to follow, though. Just a minute later, Saints coming right back up the park. A ball flung in by McMenamin, met by Mandron at the back post. Olisanya there to tap in from a couple of yards out. Both Gartenman and McDonald completely failing to pick up the striker in the middle of the box. That's how it finished, with results elsewhere, in particular the Hibs and Motherwell results. That probably now puts the final nail in the coffin of any top six hopes. But perhaps more pressingly, the Dons now down to 10th, only 4 points clear of Ross County in the playoff position. No league wins in 10. We're averaging a measly 0.33 points per game under Warnock. That's enough to see us finish the season on around 30 or 31 points, which is lower than the tally that Dundee United had last season. So all I can say is God bless Livingston. On the data front, possession 68% to 32% in favour of Saints. Shots 14-9. Shots on target 5-3. Expected goals 1.78 to 0.88 in favour of the home side. So, gents, and I don't know who wants to start with this one, but where do you start with that one?
I'm going to be a courteous host and pass the first comment on to our guest.
Oh, lovely. I honestly don't even know anymore. It's so bad. I'm sure we'll come on to it later on regarding everything regarding the actual club, but the utter collapse at the end for the second goal, and then the manager making an arse of it, the players making an arse of it, the desire not being there, every single negative thing you can possibly say is in that game. I think it's actually quite a good representation of our season, some absolutely incredible highs with the Conor Barron goal, because let's be honest, it was an absolute peach, to the defending for, what, 85 minutes against a submitted team who are no better than they've been really massively in any other season, to turning on the game. If you come home and you turn on the game at 91 minutes, you're like, oh, we're winning the game. And then you fucking lose the game. It's just phenomenal how it goes wrong in so many places across the whole game. I mean, I actually wrote some comments here. So I'm prepped. I have two positives here. Great work from Duke for Barron's goal. Duke and Hoylett, decent. That is the positives. The negatives are two pages as to just how bad it was. Simeon had a lot of chances, a lot of which came from our defending being as poor as it's been all season. The penalty, my first thought when I saw it live was it's a coming together. I actually thought he'd blown for a free kick for Aberdeen.
Yeah.
And then when you watch it back, you think, okay, he's absolutely clattered him. But Devlin's completely unaware of what's going on behind him. He casually jogs out to clear the ball. Just fucking put it in the stand. It's the 91st minute. And Gav, I'm very sad to say, I don't think there's much Roos could have done to save that. It was a really good penalty, but it's just awful. And then their second goal comes from an attacking throw-in that we had up the pitch. Devlin chucks a ball he launches it at Majovski, who loses the ball. Shinny absolutely sells himself trying to win it back. And then I don't need to say anything else about the McDonald, Garton and Roos shambles. It's a very good representation of our entire season, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, just echo a lot of those sentiments. I mean, I listened to it on the radio. You know, I could see me on social media immediately that the Conor Barron goal is an absolute worldie. And you think going a goal up, that's a bit of a shocker. And then seeing the goal itself, it's the kind of, it would be one thing if it's a corner kick and it's a sclaff and, you know, someone prods it home. But for one of our players to score a goal like that, it would surely, you know, rejuvenate the support and bring a renewed sense of belief to the players that we've got players in our squad, in our team that can deliver a goal like that and, you know, keep going and take the game to St Mirren, best of the advantage, get the killer goal. And by all accounts, you hear that the shape's looking good. Duke and Hoylett are creating chances, creating trouble for the St Mirren defence. And then, predictably, of course, we make the very negative substitutions that we do, which then bring on the pressure. And you can talk about that, and you can talk about the referee and VAR all you want, but Mark's right. You know, William Miller was saying on the radio that St Mirren had chances, but they weren't really causing us a huge amount of problems. And then it's such an avoidable equalising goal. Likewise, I mean, it's Nicky Devlin. I saw, Gary, your comment on Twitter that he's played a lot of football, and I completely acknowledge that, but this is not a tiredness thing. This is Nicky Devlin, as is peak modern-day Aberdeen footballer, dithering on the ball and being shocked to find out there's an opposition player on the pitch who wants to get to it and costs us. The only thing I'm shocked about with that is how long it took for VAR to decide it was a penalty, because I could see it from the first time I watched it. So what was going on there, I don't know. And disappointing as that is, you know, moments ago, I'm looking at the league table, I'm thinking to myself, right, we're on 30 points now. Dundee are on 33. We're going to play Dundee, what, twice for the break? So maybe this could be like a little mini turnaround of the season. We can actually hit that top six mark. A point away in St Mirren, it's not great, but it's not terrible. And then Willie Miller makes this kind of orgasmic sound, which I found a little bit disconcerting. And before you know it, we're 2-1 down and the game's over. Again, a classic of the genre. I mean, Bojan Miovski, we've commented ad nauseum about how much Bojan's overall game has improved, including his hold-up play. He's got to be better, got to be stronger here. Loses the ball. I think it's Conor Barron who loses the ball in the tackle. And then St Mirren break. It's the familiar tale of Aberdeen players chasing shadows. But then we get back in numbers in the penalty area. But of course, it's the Kilmarnock goal with Matty Kennedy all over again, where just no one actually wants to mark an opposition player. They just want to mark space. easy header, and then how on earth do you have a striker in the 6-yard box completely unmarked to pat the ball home? And you're thinking, like, what this is, where does this end? How does this story end? Because teams that avoid relegation don't suffer results like this. And we're in a horrific state of form, and that's like gotta be the biggest like gut punch to this team that I can think of. And yeah, I went through a sense of like apathy on the day to borderline excitement to just, I can't stand this team anymore. Can't stand them. Oh, I just want to stop.
Graham, I'm going to come in a second, but Gav, you're an advocate for Angus McDonald on here, yes, a lot, but he is deeply culpable for that winning goal yesterday. What he's doing, I have no idea.
I think what he's doing, I mean, obviously only Angus knows what he's doing. I think what he's doing is he's trying to go back on the line in case the guy is a mandarin that heads the ball back, heads it towards goal, and he maybe wants to like cover it. But to me, that's Kelleher's job. If the header goes his way, he's got to save it. You can see the man, and Gartman's the same. You know, you've got to be aware of what's around you. Yeah, I don't understand what he's up to.
Yeah.
A big advocate for Angus McDonald, but he didn't do well there.
Graham, like for 89 minutes yesterday, I was primed and ready to kind of praise us for winning in what would have been fairly ugly manner. You know, we got the early goal. Thought we dug in. I thought we showed a lot more fight and a lot more grit than we'd seen in recent weeks. It's probably fair to say. I thought defensively we looked a bit more solid, but that's relative just given how soft a shite we've been in recent weeks. Thought we actually won the midfield battle for most of the game with Shinny and Barron in there. And I thought Phillips, despite the fact he only completed like 8 passes, I think, I thought he really put himself around kind of physically, really got around the pitch well. We maybe didn't pose as much as an attacking threat as I'd have liked to have seen, but given the circumstances we were in, Graham, 3 points was all that really mattered yesterday. And then just a maddening 3-minute spell right there at the death.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter from here on in to the end of the season what it looks like. We need to find a way of getting points, and chucking 3 with a couple of minutes to go is just absolutely ridiculous. But like Martin Gavin said, we've seen this time and time again this season, particularly in the defence, where it's a surprise that there might be an opposition player in the box and they might actually want to get to the ball as well. I mean, Devlin trotting out is just fucking inexcusable. It's not the first time he's done that. And Mark's absolutely right. Just shell it. I mean, you're almost at the death. Put it into the crowd. Regroup. And away you go. Don't be trotting out. And then when you do realise that someone's there, yeah, of course, that's smart. Barge him in the back. That always works out. No player ever throws himself to the ground. It's just fucking stupidity all round. And we've seen it time and time again from the vast majority of the players throughout the course of the season. And I don't know where that comes from. I mean, that level of stupidity. And I don't understand how you... Well, you're not going to get rid of it now because you're stuck with these guys. But you need to find a way of just making it explicit. If the ball was in our box, nobody is allowed to do anything other than the old Derek White. Put it into the stand and give yourself a chance to regroup. It's just fucking stupid.
That's a reference I enjoyed there.
That was good to enjoy that. Mark, I mean, I saw plenty of people last night suggesting Warnock can't necessarily be held too much to account for this one yesterday. It's on the players, etc. And there's definitely a huge amount of truth about that, because it shouldn't really matter who is standing on the sideline when you're one up with literally minutes to go. But that said, the decision to go to the back three as early as he did, like, really confused me at the time. And I do feel it encouraged us just to sit in and sit in. We got deeper and deeper, despite the fact that Simon hadn't really... I didn't think Simon played well. I didn't think they were really threatening us that much. They had the one chance to Boyd Munson in the first half. It hits the bar. And how often do you see us in these situations over the years when you decide to do this? You eventually concede when you invite that pressure.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, the only experience that I think Warnock's had of the back three was the first 29 minutes of the Motherwell game. And that went really well. So why on earth he's going to do that, I don't understand. He's had a habit in the last few games of taking off players who've actually been playing well. Duke and Hoylett, I would say, were by far and away the most threatening players that we had.
Hoylett was playing really well in that 10 or 15 minutes before
played really well.
He took him off.
Brought a really good save out the keeper as well. But when you're not up 6-0, you don't bring off your most attacking players. And as you say, guy, he went to the back so early that you're never going to, a team like Aberdeen, as fragile as they are not going to be able to defend against, I would say, anyone for half an hour in that setup. It's been used so often this season, and it hasn't worked at all. So why on earth he's put that pressure on a fragile defence, which he must know, is beyond me. But I do think something like 70% of the blame has to go with the players, and 30% with Warnock for his decision making. I mean, the players just, there are just collapses constantly.
Oh, yeah.
Constantly. So yeah, I think he has to have a share of the blame.
I think from my perspective, like, I get perhaps why he would have taken Hoyle out, given how little football he's played lately. Maybe he was running out of steam. And you could maybe make a case to say, bring McGrath on, put him on the left side, or switch him and Duke over. I don't think you need to take Duke off when you do, again, given how well he's playing. And no matter what the situation is, we don't need James McGarry on the pitch for anything. So the choice of him is fucking bewildering. I mean, I would then maybe say, argue, get Sokler on, maybe play him a little bit closer to Bojanowski, or just ask him to do a job on the flank, because we know he's got pace. He can. I think the thing about this is, like, we go with that defensive mindset and then don't give ourselves an out ball to hit them on the counterattack. All we're asking for is Miowski to do everything by himself. If you keep someone like McGrath and then Sokler on, you're going to have a little bit of pace so you can break and have that in the back of Sitmiren's mind. But obviously, as you see, they're just then attacking, knowing that, you know, Billy Miowski, as good as he is, isn't probably going to run away from most defenders. So that was bewildering. I think, yeah, there's an element there. But, I mean, this is an issue that's gone beyond Neil Warnock. It's an issue that's been plagued Stephen Glass, Jim Goodwin, Barry Robson, and now Neil Warnock, just in pressure situations. These players just can't handle it. Mark, were you there for the Dundee game that cost Barry Robson's job?
Yes.
When they had the protest at the end of the game. One of the most confusing things I've ever seen is when the players came over and the players were applauded after that game, after the whole, you know, sack by Robson thing. These players have gotten away with fucking murder.
I think by that point, I'd gone, to be fair. But yeah, and protest, is that a bit of a strong word for it? Was it not about four people?
The gathering at the front of the Mirkland stand with the banner, I think it was on the
bench.
Oh,
right, I'm with you.
And then the players came on and the players were applauding. I was like, these guys have gotten away with fucking murder for this entire season.
And then Conor Barron yesterday scores and shushes the Aberdeen fans. Like, oh, geez, there's just so much wrong with it, with everything.
It wasn't quite Mark Kerr with the old get it right up here and the point to the back of the shirt. But yeah, I don't really, that was like Matty Kennedy levels of confusing as to what his intentions were there.
I think a good word to describe it was probably silly. A bit silly.
Yes, a bit daft.
And I think it's that kind of action is a big part of why there's such a huge disconnect now, I think, between the fans and the players. You see Kel Roos sarcastically applauding supporters at the end of the St. John's game, Conor Barron shushing the supporters after scoring a goal. I mean, I don't get what these guys are thinking.
Well, maybe come on to that in a little bit more detail later on, Gav, I think it's probably a fair point as well. But Graham, I mean, do you think as well, it looked to me, and I was kind of baffled by this yesterday, given how much experience Warnock has, it was like he panicked or got spooked when St Mirren kind of went almost four up top. Like, they weren't quite a four up top, but they kind of went to that sort of shape with about half an hour left. And it's like he got spooked on it. And you saw, I think everyone's probably seen the momentum chart that's been doing the rounds from the game yesterday. You can point the exact moment at which we switch to a back three and we offer literally no attacking threat for the rest of the game.
I don't know. Maybe he was just thinking of a couple of wacky zingers for his post-match interview. You know my thoughts. I think the guy's a fucking idiot. And nothing he's done has proved me to be incorrect. He's just passed it. And I understand that, yeah, he's not on the pitch, but I do think the decisions he makes just invites the pressure onto us. And when you've got a team that is as bad at defending and is as soft as we are, inviting the opposition onto you is just just stupidity. We were playing reasonably well, or rather we were in the game. We weren't being overrun until he makes these changes. I don't understand what he's doing, given that the whole point of him being in, I thought, was because he had the wealth of experience to avoid stuff like this. You know, whereas maybe, certainly, we've all moaned that in that sort of situation, Robson would have defaulted to, all right, okay, let's try and hold on to this. And he'd have done something similar. We were always saying, no, well, that's just causing us problems by inviting teams onto us. Then you've got Warnock doing the exact same thing. I don't really understand it. I think fundamentally, it doesn't matter who you're playing. If your defence is absolutely solid, it's still a risky tactic to invite someone onto you. But when your defence is absolutely abysmal, it's just suicide to invite the opposition onto you.
Graham, you've always been a good judge of character, mate. I'll say that about you. Devlin, he was getting it tight on social media last night for the error, which, as the brain fart we saw against Hibs of the week, perhaps culpable in part as well for Kilmarnock's second goal last week as well. Gav, you kind of touched on it. I kind of want to just explore this a little bit further, because I know you're saying that this isn't a tiredness issue you saw yesterday, but I kind of feel that that is. That to me looks like a player who is leggy, who's mentally tired. I touched on it yesterday. He's played 42 games this season. That's tied with Rus and Miowski for most appearances of anyone in our squad this season.
Also kind of his job though, isn't it?
Yeah, but just let me finish, Graham. Come on. It's three shy of the total he played an entire season for Livy last season as well. I'm not saying it's an excuse, but is this another example though where the lack of like squad depth and options that we have is coming back to bite us here?
No.
Well, there we go.
Thank you. No, I don't buy that for a second. I think if this is a situation where it's maybe one apiece and both teams are going for the win and Simbin and Launch were over the top and they've got a lightning fast striker that Devlin just has got nothing in the tank and he can't catch him, then I'd say that's maybe a situation. But this is just Devlin just being far too casual. I didn't know if I was watching Simbin at the Smizer or if I was watching WCW Thunder in 1999, because all I saw was Big Lazy. Just rocking things. Inexcusable stuff. He's just got to have a little bit of urgency, be aware of his surroundings and just take responsibility and get rid of the ball. And he doesn't do any of that. And for the second time in recent weeks, he's cost us a win.
Mark, do you have any sympathy with the idea that he's maybe tired, leggy, mentally done in?
No.
No?
No, he's 30 years old. It's not like he's older. I mean, Graham Shinney must have played not far off the same number of games as Devlin. Okay, he's looked leggy, I know, but he's a fair bit older than Devlin. I don't buy into the fact that he's tired, no. I think he's just... I don't know what's happened to him, because up until about, 4 or 5 weeks ago, I would have said he's probably been one of the better players that we've had all season. Okay, the majority of them have been absolutely awful, I know that, but he just seems to have dipped hugely over the last 4 or 5 weeks. I don't know if it's a confidence thing, maybe. He doesn't strike me as a player that we play without confidence, or it would affect his game. But I think, Gav, it was you that said on Twitter he was a bottom six player last season and he's coming into a top six team, and maybe he's not able to handle it. I mean, that's maybe a flippant thing to say, but the last few weeks he's been shocking, generally shocking.
Graham, there's no point in me coming to you, is there, because you've got no truck with the idea about professional footballers being tired.
No. what did he expect? He came to Aberdeen for supposedly, you know, to be further up the table, go further in competitions, play in Europe. You can't then be like, he was always going to play more games. All of these guys were always going to play more games. I don't accept. Like Gavin's example, if he gets absolutely skinned for pace late on in the game, I'm sympathetic to that. But he's got all the time in the world to react to that. And it's just laziness. Well, I don't know if it's laziness. It's just a guy who's once again surprised that there is someone competing for that ball. He could have dealt with that so much better.
I don't dispute the fact that he would have expected to come here and play a lot of football. But I guess more of my point is more around the way that the squad's been built and the squad's been set up again. Because this to me talks, and I'm going to go through some of the players in a bit more detail in a minute, but it talks more to me around the fact that it goes back to the structural issues we found with the club this season. Because, you know, we were told at the start of the season, you know, when we were all encouraged to go and buy our season tickets, which the fan base did in record numbers again, and when we all went and bought the shirts in record numbers again, and when corporate was sold out from the word go again this season, we were told that part of this was because we were building a squad that was going to be capable of competing on both a European and domestic footing at the start of the season. Everybody, Graham, you're right, we were aware about how many games that would mean people would need to play. And yet now we're heading into what is the business end of the season at the wrong end of the table with a squad that looks leggy AF across the board and a number of players who look like they've been kind of running into the ground. I mean, Mark, you just touched on Graham Shinney there. You've got Graham Shinney, who's played 40 games this season so far. He's not played more than 40 games in a season since the 2020-21 season with Derby. He's come nowhere close to playing that number of games in recent seasons. McGrath played 38 times a season. That's one more than he played for his entire season with United last season. He's not played this sort of number of games since the same season I just touched about with Shinney when he was at St Mirren. Richard Jensen's on 36. He's never played this many games in a season before. Gartman on 34 has never played this many games at this sort of level before. Rubicic, despite being injured for the last few weeks, is on 30. He'd have been 36, 37 by now as well. He's never played that many games in a season before. I mean, the worry for me now is that you've got we're in the stage of the season now and we're in this massive battle. You need players who are clearly physically up for the fight, and we've got a squad that is, in my eyes, starting to run on empty, and there's fuck all in the way of options kicking about to alleviate that load.
Drugs. What's the worst? They get us through the season and get their contracts rescinded. I mean, it's a win-win.
I take you mean more performance enhancing drugs rather than, like, you know,
if whatever it takes to get them through. I don't really mind how they get there.
The issue with the number of it's just such a mess. Everything about it is just a mess. Every single aspect of the club, from board level to the operations guys down to the squad to it. Everything is just an absolute mess. And then you've got a manager just going back on to Warnock, who, Graham, I'm kind of siding with you a little bit over him, because every single interview he's ever done is about him. Everything is... He was asked on Red TV, how do you get the squad over this and onto the cup game at the weekend? And he immediately changed it into, well, I need to get over this first. I haven't felt this bad in years. I like, fuck off, mate. And then he goes on the attack again about a squad that is incredibly fragile, and he's killing any of the players that we had that were playing okay. I mean, Majowski's not scored in five now, is it?
Four at least, yeah.
After his comments about him being at fault for a goal. Like, as soon as he said that, I think the collective Aberdeen supporters group went, what the fuck are you doing? What's wrong with you? He's one of the only players that's actually done anything. And if you're going to deflect off of a loss, you need to choose something a little bit better than, how long did the VAR check take? The players were getting very chilly. They were very cold. You can do something better, Neil, for fuck's sake. Oh, and also, he looks fucked. He looks absolutely
ancient. He looks so beaten.
Looks fucked.
I guess we'll talk about Neil Warnock in a little bit more detail, but I think the next result could be the deciding factor in how long we have Neil Warnock on these shores. But I don't think anyone's disputing the fact that the recruitment in the summer was shambolic. And I saw someone correctly pointing out that if you take away Majowski, Ramadani, and I think Duke, you'd probably still call a net, you know, win. Otherwise, you know, you look at the recruitment in the last 3 years, and it's generally speaking been completely shite, despite the fact we've like lauded this whole new brand new approach. But we're talking about the individual incident here of Nicky Devlin against St Mirren. And for me, I bear in mind Nicky Devlin did not play against St Johnstone in the weekend at all. Sorry, in midweek, should I say. Didn't feature, so had the week off. Jack Milne played. I don't know why guys look at me like that.
Devlin came off the bench, didn't he?
Nope.
No, he didn't play.
Did not?
I did. Nope. Fuck all. Kind of like St Mirren. There's no excuse here. This is not a tiredness thing. This is just
I'm not just talking about Devlin, though. This is more around the fact that you've just got a whole bunch of guys now who are just being run into the ground now.
Well, yeah, there's no dispute there. And again, we've got a manager who's come in and said that Dante Bolvara was a guy that he could get on board with, gave him the captain's armband, and then since then I don't think it's really featured much at all. Leighton Clarkson's in and out of the team. But yeah, I mean, again, I can't put too much blame on the manager just because of how shoddy the recruitment has been over the past 3 years. And well, yeah, like I say, I think people have given a lot of credit to this new recruitment strategy when in fact it's kind of a big part of why we're completely fucked.
If you also look into the signings that have been made, if you're signing those players, you assume that a lot of them are going to be successful and can be part of this squad rotation, but you've probably eliminated, what, 4 or 5 players out of them just on the basis that they're dreadful. Morris is obviously no longer part of the plans by all accounts. I don't think he was on the bench on Saturday again, was he?
Nope.
Rubicic is injured.
And then Sokler hasn't featured under Warnock.
Sokler hasn't played. Polvara's played twice, maybe, under Warnock. Gay's obviously gone. So you've lost 5 or 6 before you even look at injuries or rotation. They've just been bombed out the squad completely.
Not to mention the guys like, you know, or Daddy and Wes Williams, who just didn't work out. But, you know, again, we didn't even bother attempting to replace in January.
I was going to come and talk about some of the summer recruitment again, because I think it's quite important, because I think it leads us back to exactly the mess we're in all over again. Because, you know, we spent so much time chasing Tonio Teklic, right? And we failed, right? And we failed to get over the line. And okay, like sometimes...
How was he going to feature into a 3-5-2, by the way?
Yeah, exactly. But I was going to say, okay, like sometimes those things will happen, that you get gazumped by another club, like you just can't get somebody with the line. Fine, that's what happened. But like the question I would be asking then is, who was our backup, like second on the list for that area of the pitch? Because we never brought in another player of that ilk or in that position in the summer window. Similarly, you know, we pursued Liam Scales all summer and ended up jilted at the altar at the last minute. Richard Jensen came in on, I think it was the 23rd of August. So he came in the day we played, or the day before we played Hecken away, didn't he? From memory.
In the squad for the Hecken game, so yes.
You know, we claimed to have been tracking Jensen for some time. So perhaps he was on the shortlist if the Scales deal never came off. But I'd be really interested to understand where Jensen was placed on the list. Like,
yeah,
like,
but Gary, just to say, also this, we've been tracking these players for a long time. So Stephen Gunn and I think Alan Burrows have both come out and said that they use this My Scout program that allows you to track as many players as you want. So it's really easy for them to come out and say, we've been tracking him for a long time. We've probably been tracking Kylian Mbappe for quite a long time as well. Do you know what I mean? You can put as many players on this list as you want, and it's a really easy buyout or cop-out for them to say, I'm delighted we've been tracking him for a long time. Bollocks.
Yeah. Well, this is what I get. I'd love to know. I mean, if you think about the Jensen one, right? Given how long we continued to pine after Liam Scales through the summer and ended up looking just like a desperate fucking horny teenager at the local school disco, given how long it took for that to fall away, there's a good chance that Jensen wasn't our number two pick. Because a good chance whoever that number two pick was probably went somewhere else. You know, Gartenman came on a deadline day, and again, there was chat, and Mark, you're absolutely right about this. Like, Robson said at the time, we'd been tracking him for a while, but that was clear as day that he was brought in because McDonald was fucked and Williams was fucked. And so we panicked and had to get our centre-half in the door.
And we couldn't get Matty Pollock.
And we couldn't get Matty Pollock. Or Dadia, don't get me started on how he ended up here. And then Papi Habib Gay. Like, it's all laughable stuff.
Yeah, there's no way that management team, recruitment team, had been tracking Habib Gay for the year plus that they claimed. Because if they had, they would have watched him and realised he's not a very good footballer.
Well, they couldn't have been, because if it was a year plus, he would have been a Darren Mowbray target. And yeah, I've got it on extremely good authority that he was never on the Darren Mowbray list once.
Yeah, so it's bollocks.
So it's absolute horseshit that he was on that list, unless it was the other Papi Habib Gay. I mean, there's just no chance it happened. I mean, and Graham, I guess this all brings us back once again to the post-match yesterday. Almost the bigger part of what happened yesterday after the football itself was Davey deciding that this was the game after which to decide to break cover. Now, like, for me, I've never been one of these people that's been desperate to see what Cormac or anyone else has to say on Twitter about things, because it's only ever going to be something akin to what we saw yesterday. But holy shit, Graham. I mean, where'd you start with what the chairman does last night?
I've been thinking about this ever since I read it And I thought, this is a Sunday night, you know, we'll obviously want to switch off at some point because we'll have work in the morning. So I think I'm going to keep my powder dry till the end of the season. But what I will say is, I think it's embarrassing and it's unprofessional, the wording, in my opinion, and it's a total nonsense statement. I mean, what is the point? Everyone knows that you can't call out players in contract situations. That's fine. But when you make a big deal of being one of us and super transparent and everything, and then you just go into hiding as soon as it's not going your way and you can't make it about you, what do you expect from people? It's a totally shite statement and it does absolutely nothing. I see people like, oh, well, he said something. He said fuck all. He's put a couple of sentences that are shite, and I don't know if that's supposed to be a cheap dig at the club that's what, top of the league at the moment or second, it makes no difference, or light years ahead of where we are. I don't know who gets a rise out of that, or who thinks that's our boy. You steer the course, Davey. You know what you're doing. It's absolute lunacy. And we're supposed to have a PR rep on the board. I don't know if she takes a salary. If she does, well, that hurts me. I can't believe that the man who runs your club puts stuff out like that. It's just fucking nonsense. And if you've got nothing to say, you should just shut up. It's just hot air. That's all he is. It's hot air, because there will be no actions from this. I'd be amazed if we even see any sight of this famous report that is currently being undertaken. Because what it's going to say, if it's truly independent, is it's basically going to take a line from Cormac all the way down to probably anyone involved with the playing staff and just say they need to go. And no one's going to publish that or act on it, are they?
I think I wagered it with somebody else on Twitter. I will personally pay £100 to the AFC Community Trust if the full unredacted version of that report is published anywhere. But Graham, it was good to see you keep your powder dry for the end of the season, mate. I can't wait for that powder dry.
Yeah.
Mark, do you want to moisten your powder?
Yeah, I'll give it a dip.
Don't say give it a dip either.
The word he used to describe the league form with the same squad of players was baffling.
It's not baffling to me.
It's not baffling to anybody, Dave. I mean, nobody is baffled by this. And also, is that him questioning if the same squad of players have the same heart that they do for playing St Mirren away that they did for playing Frankfurt at home? It's maybe me reading way too much into it. But I think the only thing that does is, as Graham says, nothing. 99.9% of the replies to that tweet are going to be negative. So it doesn't placate anybody. I would rather he didn't say anything ever. Maybe twice a season he pops up and says something that has a bit of context to it, rather than this utter, utter shite that he tweets or phones into BBC Radio Scotland. I'm never forgetting that. That was one of the most insane evenings of my life. It doesn't do anything, and it doesn't tell anybody anything, and it isn't going to calm anyone down. No one's read that and went, right. Kilmarnock on Saturday, brilliant. Nobody has taken any comfort from that or anything. He's better just saying fuck all. Shut up, Dave.
Is everyone in agreement that they think the whole "we don't do walking away" was a dig at Rangers?
Yeah, I was going
to
come on. I
have to think that he's lacking in self-awareness enough to just think that was a rallying, we're all in this together thing, forgetting, you know, what that phrase means in Scottish football. But I guess that's the smaller part in comparison to what he says regarding, you know, it's baffling the squad, the same squad that was in a cup final and beat Frankfurt. I mean, I said it, I think last time we were on the show, group stage football is not a success because we lost our way into it. And then we won one game in it, which was a dead rubber. And like, he's talking about these same squad. I mean, I think a lot of the players that played against Frankfurt haven't played much since then because, you know, they're the fringe players who have been discounted by either Robson or Neil Warnock when it comes to the serious fit, I guess. And the cup final, we beat League One Stirling Albion. We beat a terrible Ross County side and we scraped past Hibs in spite of an awful performance. And then we didn't even have a shot on target in the final against Rangers. If this is the standard that's being set by the board, and that's what I'm clearly taking in inference here, I mean, let's not forget, this is the same board who clearly fed Stephen Glass the lines about how successful managers win trophies at Aberdeen. Yep. What the fuck is going on when that's the level where we can just say, well, you know what? We didn't get beat as much in Europe as we thought we would, and we got to a cup final. So that justifies not improving the squad in any way, shape, or form. When, as Mark says, we could all see from what, October, at the like maybe at the latest, that the squad needed major help.
In August, you could see it. We started the season with Shaden Morris playing right wing back, for fuck's sake.
You could have ended that with we started the season with Shaden Morris.
I mean, we started a game with Celtic on the second game of the season, I think, with Shaden Morris at right wing back and Ryan Duncan at left wing back.
And Jack McKenzie and Nicky Devlin at centre back.
Yeah, like you could. I mean, and this is Gav, you're right about it. And the thing about this is what I now found interesting about this tweet as well, is that, you know, we touched on it, I think, on last week's show. The sponsors' dinner the week before, the same things were being held up as achievements this season. That we'd beaten Eintracht in what was a dead rubber, right? I mean, like, an Eintracht game, let's not forget, meant nothing because we'd shat the bed against Helsinki twice and against Pauk at home. And then they talk about the cup final. And it's like, great, we got to a cup final. That's not an achievement, getting to a cup final. It's certainly not an achievement, getting to a cup final and shitting the bed on the big stage again. It's like a loser mentality which emanates from the very top of the club. And that is almost the most worrying thing about that tweet.
Yeah, it's almost some sort of, like, it's not too bad. Yeah. And even if the last line was, he's just used that phrasing and it's not anything to do with having a go at someone. Well, I don't really know what I'm supposed to take from that. Oh, thank God you guys aren't bailing out. Well, that really makes me feel much better. Maybe you should all fuck off. Maybe things would be better.
See, my shambolic brain, my Dave Cormack conditioned brain, read that as, we don't do walking away. Rangers died because their board walked away. The previous chairman's business have all gone down the pan. Therefore, Aberdeen Football Club would have gone down the pan. Ego, ego, love me. Maybe that's just my ridiculous Cormac brain.
I mean, I honestly just think it was like, I genuinely think it was like just a, I honestly think it's as plain as day as just try to finish off with a Rangers went bust lol sentence at the end of it to try and like appease or like make a certain level of our support lap up and go, he's one of us, beach end boy.
But if that's the case, then that's, I think that that's worse. Yeah. If that's what he's intention, read the fucking room, Dave.
Gav, like, he asks us to trust him to get it right. Mistake after mistake, misstep after misstep on the football front. Do you trust him? Can we trust him?
On what basis? He's got nothing right since he took charge of the football club. He's got nothing right since he wasn't even like properly in charge. I mean, the man named a fucking training ground after himself, for fuck's sake. Yeah, this is the thing about it. It's the worst thing about the Willy Wonka experience and also Dave Cormack in charge of Aberdeen, the unknown. Like, if we sack Neil Warnock, then what do we do next? I mean, if, as I think might happen, if we lose to Kilmarnock, Neil Warnock says, fuck this, and is way back down to Cornwall. There's nothing. This is the whole thing, like you say, about the review. I'm glad you pointed out the word redacted, because I was trying to remember what it is when you take the Sharpie and just scroll through everything. Like, we'll leave in key. Like,
the report gets left out just a
blah. We'll leave in key buzzwords like, you know, top 100 UEFA club and attacking and never lose and Davy Cormack. Otherwise, you know, that'll be it. No, of course I don't trust him. I don't trust him, nor Alan Burrows, nor Stephen Gunn, nor really anyone at the football club. And with every passing game, that includes the players and everybody else. I mean, well, not everybody else. I mean, the ticket office do a great job.
Mark, can we trust him to get it right? I mean, the evidence is overwhelming in the other direction right now.
No. In a word, no. You absolutely cannot trust him. He has absolutely no achievements, or he hasn't earned it in any way, shape or form. He asked, and again, we go back to the same thing that has been said so many times by a lot of fans. The club asked the fans to do their bit in the summer, and the fans did. Season ticket sales were the highest they've ever been. Shirt sales were unbelievable. The club shop in the summer was constantly busy, so they must have been making a a good whack off of that as well. Corporate sells out, get the fans excited with the transparency in inverted commas from the club, blah, blah, blah. And then you deliver this pile of shit. We have fucking done our bit. You plebs haven't, and I was waiting to use a much stronger word there, you plebs haven't done anything like it. So why the hell should I trust you? You haven't earned it. You haven't done anything to even make me believe this is going in the right direction in any way. Why the fuck would I trust you?
25 points off Hearts.
I know. Bear in mind, when we beat Hearts at Pittodrie just before Christmas, I think were we 7 points behind them at that stage with two games in hand on them? I think as it stands now, they've got double our points tally. That just says everything about where our season has just gone in the last 6-7 weeks. Which leads us, Graham, we are in a deep, deep hole and we're in a relegation battle now. There can be people who may have been doubting this for the last 2 or 3 weeks. There can be no doubt about it now after the weekend's performance. 4 points above County. The saving grace as it stands right now is that County's run into the split, and I can't believe in the early stages of March, I'm looking at Ross County's run in to the split and going, well, that looks a bit difficult, so hopefully we'll be okay. They've got Hibs at home, Hearts at home, they're at Pittodrie, away to Killie, and then at home to Sevco. But Graham, already it now looks like our game against them on the 30th of March, and thank God I'm going to be on holiday for this, is already shaping up to be potentially a relegation shootout.
It's an absolute shambles that you're... Basically, the strategy is that we probably won't pick up any points, but Ross County probably won't, and that'll be enough. That's kind of what we're saying here, is that hopefully everyone else's continues to be rubbish. It's just absolutely crazy, and I don't see how you can look at the table and not say that we are absolutely right in the shit. Regardless of what run we've got and what run the teams around about us have got, why speaking to someone at work about this, like even going back to a couple of months, or like a month ago when we had games in hand, and we're like, oh, you know, if we do this, we do that. And then I think he pointed out, it's like we won something like 6 games all season at that point. And here we all were like, okay, we've got a couple of games in hand, just get them out of the way, and then we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And how are you going to get another 6 games out of the remaining, whatever it was at that point, 12 or something, when you hadn't done that all season? We're totally fucked. If anyone thinks that we're looking at this and thinking, look at the run, or, you know, we still have a game in hand on the likes of St. Johnstone and stuff like that, that we're okay, just don't see it myself.
The only crumb of comfort that I'm taking from our predicament right now is that it is still within our hands, at least. And we do have 2 games each against Livingston and Ross County. And so, like, my thinking is that we can get through those games and win.
We're famous for that, aren't we?
We are indeed. Well, we've got a good record against County this season. We're on track for the whitewash. So, like, my fingers just hope that that's just going to be enough. And then, obviously, we reset in the summer and whatever will happen will happen there. But I think the little concern I do have is that I still see... Even Livingston, as bad as they are, I see them still fighting for everything. County have had a little bit of an upswing in form since Don Cowie took charge, and he's got the players back on side at least. So yeah, that game at Pittodrie against County is going to be the biggie for sure.
According to the radio yesterday, Livingston should have beaten St. Johnstone yesterday. They had a great chance
right at the end.
Yeah, and I'm with Graham on this. I it gives me the fear that it's still in our hands, because everything that has been in our hands this season we have made a mess of. And just to give you my own personal feelings, Gary, I said to you yesterday, this I have such little belief in this team to do anything that is expected of them. And I was there for the McGee era, Skovdal. Okay, there was a few amusing points for him, but I believe less in this team than I did in any of those other teams. They just have absolutely nothing about them. No fight, no belief, no heart, no care, nothing. So the fact that it's in our own hands doesn't give me any comfort at all. Because as I say, anything that we've had in our own hands this season, we've made a mess of.
It feels as unlikable an Aberdeen team as I can ever think of watching.
I don't know. I think I've disliked Aberdeen teams before for various different reasons. I'm not sure I actively dislike this Aberdeen team.
Maybe not the entirety of the team, but there's a there's more than a few that I find troublesome.
It is kind of ironic that we've taken 5 points off of Rangers and Celtic this season, which is actually what's currently keeping us out of the relegation.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw, is it Hoof Cinch Ball, where he showed the league. And as it stands, in a Rangers and Celticless league, we are second bottom.
Yeah.
I think like 2 points off Livy or something like that.
Which kind of brings us to, I guess, another interesting point. And Mark, you've kind of touched on it there. Gav has. Graham, you've done it as well. Like, I keep seeing like the 94-95 season now being brought up a lot online, and it's kind of valid, but one thing that certainly the 94-95 season had is that there was a really like fervent united support base that really got behind the team and really rallied them and got them over the line towards the end of that season. And I guess now, and you know, we're just four average Joe Aberdeen supporters who just happen to spend our Sunday evenings doing this instead of, you know, productive things. As a support base now, we can think that maybe we dislike this Aberdeen team and we really kind of have massive, massive issues with the board and people who run in the club at the moment. But like, we kind of, in a way, like, we kind of have to bring ourselves together right now, which all feels really hard AF. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen us with as polarized a support as we currently have at the moment, but it feels like it's almost on us. And we've done a lot already this season as Aberdeen supporters, and we've already touched on it. Record season ticket sales, the shirt sales. People spent small fortunes following this team across Europe and also across Scotland as well. I mean, even on Saturday, I thought our away support, given the run we're on, was pretty incredible. It kind of feels almost like it's on us now to kind of will this team over the line in the next few games and make sure we finish the season with our top flight status intact somehow.
You're possibly right. I mean, you're probably right there, to be fair. But I will not sit here and tell anyone how to go about the way they react to this team.
But it kind of feels that way, that we now have to kind of almost come together and try to will this team across the line, because otherwise, if we don't do that, we're fucked.
Well, I get the sentiment, but we've turned out in huge numbers and supported them against Häcken at Pittodrie, and they bottled it against Pauk, against Helsinki, like you say, the final at Hampden against Rangers, even Hibs semi-final. Plenty of occasions we've gone back them and they still just perform as if they don't give a fuck. So yeah, do what you want as far as I'm concerned.
I also think that if it gets to the point where we drop, let's play devil's advocate here. If we drop to 11th and it looks like this could be finishing the way that it finishes with us in 11th, I think the fans will get behind the team purely because every single one of us will be absolutely shitting ourselves more than we are now, if that's even possible. And I think if it gets to the point where Ross County need to lose and we need to win, for example, otherwise we finish 11th, I think the fans will get behind them. But I think a lot of the feeling amongst the fan base has been brought on by Dave Cormack by coming out and saying he's going to do this and he's going to do that and not any of it happening. I kind of find it insulting almost to the fans, the way that the team are with them. Gary, you said earlier on that the disconnect between the team and the fans is absolutely ginormous. And is it a case of this kind of thing has happened every season for the last, 4 years? Where the club have just fallen off a cliff and been atrocious, and then it takes to about January, February, March time for us to really push on. Happened last season with Robson, and maybe the fans have just had enough and thought, you know what, fuck this. The money that we pay to follow this team, and as you said, Gav, traveling around Europe this season, and what we get back for that, and the really, is this it? And I think a lot of fans are just now at the point where you think, you know what, fuck this shit. Boo, fucking boo.
Graham, are you in the fucking boo category right now, or do you see the same point? That it's like, it feels right now the fans are the only thing that's going to will this lot over the line.
I think that's an outdated notion. The idea that these guys actually care or are that fussed what we think. The guys are on, you know, for the ones that are under contract, it makes no odds. A lot of people aren't really that vested in it, but what does make a big difference, and if there is anything in what the fans can do, it's not actually about the players, because some of them will move on to bigger and better things. Actually, will do like likes of Bjorski. Some of them will think they will. Others will be under contract. It's about the sort of the real people that run the club, the people behind the scenes, the people that, you know, the ticket office and stuff. Because anytime a business fails or a club goes down, it's never the people that should get punished to get punished. It's always, oh, we're making cuts, and it's the real people doing the day jobs that suffer. No one at the top who's getting paid six figures gets binned off, you know, to allow a handful of people to keep their jobs. So I think from that point of view, it's not actually, for me, it's not necessarily about, it's going to do with the players actually, and it's not really anything about, I have no time or interest in the people in the senior positions because I don't really see what they're delivering. It's about the people that you interact with and the people that have real jobs, and they're the ones that will be fucked over first, because it always happens. And that's probably why it's most important that I think where people can, we just do our best, you know, during the game, try and do your bit to support the team afterwards. You know, absolutely, you're entitled to your opinion, but during the game, try and do your bit, because if we can get through this and we can stay up, is kind of how I see it right now, you know, that hopefully helps out all those people that otherwise I think will be looking at a summer of, well, do I actually have a job anymore? Where do I go from here? And then the wider impact on the city, you know, it's going to be beneficial to other businesses, pubs, etc., to have a well-supported Aberdeen in the top flight. So there's a lot more at stake than just some of the players are going to get relegated or they might have to move on.
I think Graham's touched on an interesting point about the comparison between 95 and this current crop as well. It's like that team had a lot of guys who Aberdeen clearly meant something to them, whether they'd come to the youth setup with being Glass, Ian Jess, or someone like Theo had come from Holland but had a lot of success, had a lot of fondness. And then like your Shearers, your Billy Dodds. I just don't get that impression. Like the guys who are not under contract or they're expiring in the summer, like Kel Roos, I think, clearly got his mind set somewhere else. I don't know what he thinks he's going to do, but that's neither here nor there. Connor Bannon, I think, is gone. And I tell you what, if there's a team in this league who have gone full-blown Sunderland Jack Rodwell and not inserted relegation clauses in their contracts, it's Aberdeen. So look forward to paying Richard Jensen whatever he's getting when he's getting ragdolled by, I don't know, Killian Sheridan at Hampden.
And the other thing to add into that is, just to follow up on Graham's point, do you think Neil Warnock gives a fuck if we get
relegated? Of course he doesn't.
Doesn't give a fuck.
This is the thing, like, if Neil Warnock decides next season he wants to do this all again, the old, you know, come in and firefight in January, no one who is looking at Neil Warnock will consider this, like, a reason to not hire him. This will not affect his reputation at all.
Especially the way Scottish football is viewed by the English. And if he can't do it at Aberdeen, he's not going to do it anywhere. But he will not give a shit.
He'll be able to spin it to the TalkSport crowd that we were a fucking lost cause and there's nothing he could do about it.
That's just what I was going to say. And that's Mark's point exactly, is he'll do the rounds of like, ha, it's crazy up there. They don't know what they're doing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all be a big laugh. And he'll come out with this unscathed.
Yeah.
Despite the absolute carnage that has been left, not entirely down to him, but the utter carnage that will have been left in his wake, along with others. And yeah, it'll be a bit of a joke, and they'll have a wee laugh at the state of us. And then if he wants something else, you'll get something else.
I mean, unless the board, let's put this with a massive pinch of salt, have been savvy enough to make sure that his time here is performance related. And if we end up being relegated, then he walks away from here with literally fuck all in his back pocket, then that might be the only thing he cares about. But he's probably minted enough, he doesn't necessarily need to worry about it anyway. So,
well, no, and then that doesn't, you know, doesn't help us out, does it?
No, I'm not saying it does. It's just it might be the only thing it incentivizes him.
And Graham's absolutely right. If this club goes down this season under Warnock's stewardship, he will absolutely play it as, oh my God, it's so cold up there. And just all this bollocks on his speaking tours that he does. And every single one of us has agreed that Neil Warnock does not give a fuck if this club gets relegated or not. He's in charge of the football team until the end of the season. And we've all agreed that he does not care. So where are we?
This is a big part that I think the club could, and I think this might be taken out of their hands if we get beat by Kilmarnock. I think he will potentially walk if the chance of winning the Scottish Cup is gone. You're bringing in a manager who's here full time. I mean, as simple as that. That's one way that you actually show that you're actually aware of the situation we're in.
I had a very good rumour with absolutely zero context. The only context being that it's a pretty reliable source that the club are preparing for his exit if we lose to Kilmarnock and Peter Levin will get it till the end of the season, and most people at the club would be quite happy with that.
I've heard from a few people now that it's not a happy place right now, not just because of results, more to do with kind of environment and the attitude and the...
Warnock chucking his sizable weight around.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this has been wonderfully uplifting, chaps. All good. Does anyone want to venture a man of the match on Saturday? I'll take that as a no.
I forgot we still did that.
No.
No.
I don't know. Who scored the goal again? Conor Barron. Then he shushed us. So, fuck him.
Can we give it to Graham Shinney's soul as it left his body after the second goal? Fuck.
At least that was a guy who it meant something to. That's the main thing I'll say about that.
That was like a visual representation of Christian Ramirez's infamous tweet.
It's just it was the definition of the word fuck in the dictionary.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Okay, let's move on from that just now quickly. On to Lone Watch. Very quickly, let's rattle through this and then we'll come to talk about Kilmarnock next week. Kieran Aguena at Park Thistle came off the bench for the last minute as Park Thistle drew 1-1 with United in the Championship on Saturday. It's between like Raith Rovers and Dundee United currently just go to see who can actually stumble over the line in the Championship. Who do you want in the playoff, United or Raith?
Greenock Morton. Queen's Park are making like a real surge up that table. They could get the goals.
Callum Davison, bring him home. I'm joking. I'm fucking joking. Alfie Bavage at Kelty Hearts played the full 90 minutes as Kelty were hammered 5-0 home by Hamilton. Academical Finlay Marshall played 82 minutes as Edinburgh City were beaten 2-0 by Cove at Meadowbank. Dylan Lobbin came off the bench for the last 12 minutes as 10-man Forfar held on for a 0-0 draw at Stranraer. Alfie Stewart, back from suspension, came off the bench on 53 minutes but couldn't stop Dumbarton taking the points with a 1-0 win at The Rock. Aaron Reid and Adam Emsley starts on both as for Martin travel to Wigan Highland League. But a 3-1 win for Wigan, that one. Quite a mad weekend, actually, in the Highland League this week. The title race is well and truly opened up again. Finlay Murray, a start and another 90 minutes under the belt for him as his Turra side blew a 2-0 lead at Spain Park on Friday night against Banks of Dee. Kev Hanratty, Tom Ritchie for Bucky Thistle. Another week, another postponement for Bucky, Graham. What's happening up there?
It's wetter than it is here.
I thought you were going to say something else there, and I'm really disappointed in you. I thought it was going to be a euphemism. Never mind.
First time you've ever been disappointed in me? Maybe don't answer that.
Yeah, this is the first time you've ever disappointed me. I'll give you that one. Their game was Strathspey Thistle falling foul with the weather. Brendan Hamilton at Banks D, another start. He lasted 60 minutes before being subbed. As I just touched on it there, Banks D turned around a 2-0 deficit to win it late on against Turra. They went top of the table this weekend, where they remain, because Brechin City's game at Keith was called off. Were Banks D my tip, Gav?
That sounds familiar, yes. But Brechin have got a game in hand, so it's all good.
Brechin have got about 3 games in hand, I think. And I think Bucky must have about
they must have more
19
than that.
Games in hand at this moment in time.
They haven't actually played a game this season. Yeah, they're still right at the top.
That's why I can't find out who's played for them. Blair McKenzie at Huntley. Another start, another 90 minutes for him. Huntley keeping up their good form, a 3-0 win over the Can-Cans at Christie Park. Jaden Richardson, no game for him as their home fixture against Stockport County fell foul of the weather. There's Jaden. There's a guy who could play right back.
Could do a job in the Championship, you never know.
Anthony Stewart, MK Dons didn't make the squad again as Franchise FC were beaten 1-0 by Wimbledon in League 2.
He would not do a job in the Championship.
I think someone on Twitter did reach out to us that Anthony Stewart is in fact injured and that's why he's not featuring the squad. It's not because he's Anthony Stewart.
It's odd that he's not been sent back. I know he's out of contract, but normally that's what happened, isn't it? Because does that mean they're paying to rehabilitate him?
Into what? A functioning footballer?
I don't know if they've got that kind of budget, but I'm not familiar with their finances, so it might be possible.
I was enjoying a lot of the MK Dons Wimbledon stuff over the weekend.
I love the guy, oh, I can't remember his name, the player that was just shelling balls into the crowd during the warm-up.
Something Pell during the warm-up. Oh no, MK Dons were going to make an official complaint about it. Oh, brilliant.
Did you see the ball boy in the celebration of the goal? Does anyone know if he's alive?
I don't know. I saw it to begin with, I was like, oh, what a great moment. And then I was like, oh, that gets a bit tasty. He was
at the bottom of a large pylon.
Yeah, poor bastard. And then Vinny Bajewin. A start, open the scoring as Emin beat league leaders Willem II by 2-0 in the Eerste Divisie. And then he was hooked on 70 minutes. So some things never change.
I think in the words of his Instagram stories, he's back doing what he loves.
Anyway, there we go. I don't any game for the young team this week. The Quines, less said about them, the better this week. And 8-1
defeat. Excuse me. What happened in Norway, thank you?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that as well.
Sorry. Well, it's not the official start of the season. So...
This is part of him building up his fitness to come back in July and take the championship by fucking storm. Thank you very much, Gary.
Okay, sorry. Well, then let's look at it quickly. Papi Habib Gay started and scored as Kristiansund BK beat last season's third placed Tromso 3-0, I think, in a preseason game. So look out the casinos in the Kristiansund area.
Yeah, he's going to be. Next season is Louis Molt. It's going to be phenomenal in the championship.
Tony Watt. What about though? While we're talking about Kristiansund, what about the name of this lad who plays for them as well? Franklin Daddy's Boy 92A. What a name!
Careful now, guys. Careful.
That's plenty.
If we could arrange a swap for that lad, that'd be good. Daddy's Boy 9 on the back of his shirt. A replacement for Miovski next season. Oh, don't even joke about it.
Yeah, with our recruitment team, you never know.
Indeed. Right.
I think we've been tracking him for 10 months.
Who's his daddy? Right, boys. Right, let's move on, shall we? That'll do us. Quines got beat 8-1 by Glasgow City, their last game before the split. I don't need to talk any more about that, I don't think. So will that do us for the first half, Gav?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, let's do that. Let's move on. Looking for the best donuts in the northeast of Scotland? Look no further than Dough & Co. Made fresh every day and topped right in front of you at their 40-seater cafe on Belmont Street in the heart of Aberdeen. They make the perfect gift or the perfect pre-match stop-off with a full selection of bagels and hot and cold drinks. If you're listening from home, why not place your order for one of their Dough & Co. stops? There are over 28 drop-off locations across the region, delivering through the northeast on a weekly basis. Follow at Your Donut Shop across socials to stay up to date. Come on, you Reds. Welcome back to the ABZ Football Podcast. A quick shout out to Jonathan Quinnell and Scott B for their donations to the Beer and Coffee Fund in the last couple of weeks. It's much appreciated. Let's move on to talk about next Saturday. It's Saturday, isn't it, we play? Yes, it is.
Unfortunately.
12:15, lunchtime kickoff. Fourth meeting of the season with Kilmarnock. A trip to Hampden awaiting the winners for a Scottish Cup semi-final. Killy, obviously, with a clean sweep. On the Dons so far this season, played 3, lost 3, Aberdeen's record. We have failed to even register a kick in the goal bag of Kilmarnock's net. That makes no sense at all, but never mind. I'm very tired and I can't be fucking arsed changing that. The sides have faced each other 13 times. 13 times in the Scottish Cup, 7 wins for Aberdeen, 6 draws. We are currently, and these are what records are here to, they're here to be beaten, we're currently unbeaten in the Scottish Cup in our entire history against Kilmarnock. At Pittodrie, we've played each other 8 times in the Cup, 4 wins and then 4 draws. That said, we've not won any of our last 3 meetings at Pittodrie in the Cup with them. All of them have ended in draws, which we've then won the replay. And the last time we did meet in the Cup was the spectacular 4-3 win in extra time back in February 2020 in the 5th round replay after a 0-0 draw at Pittodrie. That's the one where Andy Considine just turned into Prime Ryan Giggs in that closing 30 minutes. Is Prime Ryan Giggs, is that an accept? Are we allowed to say that anymore?
I'm footballing Ryan Giggs.
I don't want to cast aspersions about Andy Considine's sister-in-law or anything like that. But let's move on pretty quickly. Our last win at home in the Scottish Cup against Killy came in March 1982, a 4-2 win. Goals from Mark McGee, Neil Simpson, a double from Gordon Strachan, and sending the Dons towards a semi-final with St Mirren before eventually lifting the trophy 4-1 over the now defunct Rangers in the final. That all, of course, leading us to that fateful night in Gothenburg a little under a year later. Killy making it into the quarter. I know, Mark. I know it's hard. I know.
That's sad.
Killy making it into the quarterfinals this year via a 2-0 win over Dundee in the fourth round, and then a win over Cove in round five, by the same scoreline. Killy, of course, drawing 2-2 at Dens on Saturday, thanks to last-minute Robbie Dee's goal. We talked about Kilmarnock to death just 2 weeks ago, so I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about them here. A couple of weeks ago, it felt like this game was going to be make or break for the season, but we're now maybe in this like curiously weird position where there's actually bigger games for us to come than this one on Saturday, but not going to be an easy one. Kilmarnock are surely going to come here full of confidence, just absolutely licking their lips at the prospect of just getting to bully us all over the pitch again.
There's potentially bigger games in our upcoming fixture list, but this is the only measure of success that we could potentially salvage from this fucking dumpster fire of a season is miraculously winning the Scottish Cup. So it's a big game for sure, and against just the most imperfect of opposition. Kilmarnock have had done a number on us this season, and you know, a couple of times last season at Rugby Park as well under Derek McInnes. It's going to be a long, tough, hard old afternoon, and I think truthfully my confidence level is very, very, very low.
It's not going to be anything different than what we've seen over the last few weeks. I feel I've already resigned myself to that. Has Kevin Van Veen played against us yet since he came back? I don't think he played against us a couple of weeks ago.
He might have come off the bench, but didn't, I think.
Are you sure? Because he didn't score. And he usually does.
He was being generous and passing it around.
He came off the bench for 4 minutes.
4 minutes, okay. All right. Well, it's not going to be anything different from what we've seen. I've already resigned myself to a defeat. And to quote my mate Cal, who messaged me last night saying, I'd rather set myself on fire than go up to Tawdry anytime soon. It is that bad. I think they will comfortably beat us.
Yeah, I think they'll set up in the familiar way of just being difficult to beat, difficult to score against. They'll go with Vassell and Watkins, and they'll ragdoll whichever combination of defenders we have. And if they need it, they've got, Van Veen, Greg Stewart will come on and look like the Greg Stewart of Kilmarnock at Pittodrie. And, you know, GMS will turn back the clock. I can't see. It would be a major surprise to me if we come through this time.
Graham, do you have any semblance of positivity to bring to this preview?
I do not.
Excellent. Lovely stuff. There we go. It would be the ultimate. I did joke about this, I jammed about my work this week. I was like, it would be the ultimate piece of absolute peak cinch for Hearts to cruise their way to third place this season, only for a relegated Aberdeen to just rock up and win the Scottish Cup and deny them a place in the revamped, is it the Conference League, like the kind of like the group stage element of it this season? Although I think that's me probably clutching at straws. I mean, I don't expect anything else, Mark, to be honest, than Killy to go with what's got them over the line against us three times already this season. They're going to be pretty direct. They'll go with Vassell and Watkins, as Gav's pointed out. Watkins hopefully maybe won't be quite as pumped as he was last time at Pittodrie, and, you know, punching. Was it Stephen Gartenman within about 10 seconds of the kickoff? It's going to be tricky, and we've not really laid a glove on Killy at all this season. I can't even think we've created many in the way of clear-cut chances against them in the three games we've played so far this season. So
no, your phrase there, got them over the line, doing a lot of heavy lifting there, because they've comfortably beaten us. And Have you seen the ticket sales for Saturday? They're very, 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 very low. So I don't think there'll be much of a crowd there either.
No, I don't think so. I think it'll be a real struggle. I think Killian only taking about 1,000 up as well, which for a quarterfinal game in the Scottish Cup feels quite low as well. I think it's quite fair. So is it on BBC? Is it on the TV?
It's on BBC One, yeah.
I presume it must be, yeah. Okay, well, there we go. We're all really looking forward to that trip to Hampden, then I can see in April. Predictions then, if anyone wants to venture some? Gav?
I'll say, in spite of everything I just said, for the sake of giving some positive energy to AB24, I'll say by some... We don't do replays in the Scottish Cup anymore, do we?
Don't think so. I think it has to be settled on the day now.
Yeah, I'll say 2-2 and we'll win on penalties. We'll take Kelleroos off on the 119th minute in a sort of Louis van Gaal-esque move, and Ross Doohan will be the hero and then dropped immediately for the next game.
Mark, that's a very specific prediction Gav's given us.
I'm going to go 3-0 Aberdeen. just a laugh.
Graham?
I am not going to go 3-0 for Aberdeen. I think we'll get beat. And I also, and I can't believe I'm actually saying this, I wouldn't even play anywhere near our first 11. I wouldn't be taking any chances. The stakes are too high. I would just put out.
And our poor wee lambs are a bit tired.
Yeah, exactly. They're all tuckered out. I wouldn't want Gary to have anything to talk about next Sunday.
God, Graham, I've listened to this podcast for a long time, and this might be the most sad I've ever heard you. And that's sad.
I feel like we should maybe insert a trigger warning at the start of the episode now.
Yeah.
Is it too late, Gav, to ask if the Samaritans want to sponsor the show this week?
I think there'll be plenty of opportunities between now and May.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be. I'm going to suggest Aberdeen 2, Killy 1 after extra time. We don't need to go to penalty shootout, thankfully. Somehow we're through.
Davy Cormack comes out on the pitch at full time and gives it the full Jurgen Klopp to the red shed.
While singing the Northern Lights.
Yeah, God. Beach End Boy.
There we go. Right, that'll do us. That'll wrap up this week's episode of the ABC Fed Football Podcast. Thanks for joining us. Thank you, Mark, once again.
Thanks, guys.
For spending your Sunday night with us. Bet you're just really, really buzzing for the weekend.
I think I'm just going to go and try myself to sleep now, yeah.
Excellent. Lovely stuff. That's what we're here for. If anyone else needs to cry themselves to sleep, then you've got our dulcet tones to get you there. Join us next time.
Just like to add, I am available for motivational lectures.
You're branching out.
To perk myself up, I'm away to go and watch that video of the Glasgow Maz and Daz confronting the boss of House of Illuminati at the entrance. And the energy of the bouncer lad just gives me joy. I'm going to go watch that on repeat for 3 hours.
Excellent. That's, there we go then.
That's going to be the entrance to the main stand corporate area at the end of the season once we've been relegated. Davy Cormack being protected by Stephen Gunn.
Oh, it's the unknown. Right, join us next time for episode 160, where we will have probably more of this nonsense. We'll look back on that Scottish Cup tie with Kilmarnock, and then we'll look ahead to another crucial doubleheader as we travel to Dundee and then to Motherwell in the Cinch. Look forward to seeing you then. Stand free. This episode of the ABZ Football Podcast was brought to you in association with Siberia Bar and Hotel on Belmont Street, Aberdeen. Head into the bar, quote the phrase ABZ Pod, that's ABZ Pod, for a £3 pint of Foster's, £4 pint of Moretti, or £5 pint of Fierce any day of the week, including match days. Siberia is open 7 days a week, all year round, and the bar is located only 30 seconds walk from the nearest bus stop, taking supporters to Clodagh Stadium for free on match days. Come on, you Reds!